On the show today, President Joe Biden speaks to the world.
Hamas and Putin represent different threats, but they share this in common. They both want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy, completely annihilate it.
Plus, fears of a widening Mideast conflict grow as the U.S. shoots down missiles and drones launched from Yemen.
The missiles and drones were launched by Iran-backed Houthi forces in Yemen and were believed to be on a trajectory toward Israel.
And later, what do we know about the explosion at the hospital in Gaza, and how do we know it? Plus, we take a look at Israel's neighbors, Jordan and Egypt. Today is Friday, October 20th, and this is VOA's International Edition. From VOA headquarters in Washington, I'm Steve Karish. U.S. President Joe Biden gave a forceful and emotional speech from the White House Thursday night, reiterating his commitment for the United States to support democracies like Ukraine and Israel from dictators or terrorists that would see them destroyed.
Hamas and Putin represent different threats, but they share this in common. They both want to completely annihilate a neighboring democracy, completely annihilate it. Hamas' stated purpose for existing is the destruction of the state of Israel and the murder of Jewish people. Hamas does not represent the Palestinian people. Hamas uses Palestinian civilians as human shields, and innocent Palestinian families are suffering greatly because of them. Meanwhile, Putin denies Ukraine has or ever had real statehood. He claims the Soviet Union created Ukraine. And just 2 weeks ago, he told the world that if the United States and our allies withdraw, and if the United States withdraw, our allies will as well, military support for Ukraine would have, quote, a week left to live, but we're not withdrawing.
He said, using a phrase he borrowed from former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, that America is an indispensable nation with a responsibility to help. And to that end, he'll be asking Congress to allocate more money to help support Ukraine and Israel.
American leadership is what holds the world together. American alliances are what keep us, America, safe. American values are what make us a partner that other nations want to work with. Put all that at risk if we walk away from Ukraine, if we turn our backs on Israel, it's just not worth it. That's why tomorrow I'm going to send to Congress an urgent budget request to fund America's national security needs, to support our critical partners, including Israel and Ukraine. It's a smart investment that's going to pay dividends for American security for generations. Help us keep American troops out of harm's way. Help us build a world that is safer, more peaceful, more prosperous for our children and grandchildren.
For more, I'm joined by VOA's White House Bureau Chief, Patsy Wita-Kuswara.
Well, essentially what President Biden is trying to do is he's trying to tie together the threat between Hamas and Putin. He said that even though they both represent different threats, but they share one thing in common, they both want to completely annihilate neighboring democracy. And he said that history has taught us that when terrorists don't pay a price for their terror, when dictators don't pay a price for their aggression, they will not stop in creating more chaos and more death and more destruction.
And President Biden used one of Madeleine Albright's terms. He called America the indispensable nation, saying our leadership, the United States' leadership in the world, is necessary. Why is that?
Yes, he is arguing that America's leadership is what holds the world together. However, I think that argument will be viewed with skepticism. There are, as you know, massive, in some cases, violent anti-Israel, anti-U.S. demonstrations in various capitals around the world, where many protesters see Israel as an occupying force that continues to annex Palestinian territory and is supported by the U.S., even as the Biden administration denounces Russia's annexation of parts of Ukraine. So some will see this as double standard from the U.S. Having said that, you know, that this argument from Biden may be getting a lot of support domestically. So far, we know that 41% of Americans, that's a larger portion than the rest, is supporting what Biden is doing to support Israel.
And as we know, inside the United States, politics are very divided. Congress can't even elect a Speaker of the House. How is his budget proposal going to go over in America, and how's it going to get passed in Congress?
Well, that's a big question, Steve, because, you know, the House must have a speaker to pass legislation. And so far, no Republican has been able to secure the 217 votes needed to claim the Speaker's gavel following the ousting of former House Speaker Kevin McCarthy earlier this month by his own fellow Republicans.
Patsy Wiedekuswara is VOA's White House Bureau Chief. Patsy, thanks for your reporting on the subject. Thanks for your time tonight.
My pleasure.
Tensions in the Middle East are ratcheting up as U.S. forces in Syria brought down two drones that were targeting them at the El Tanf base near Syria's border with Iraq and Jordan. The incident led to some minor injuries, U.S. officials said on Thursday. Washington is on heightened alert for activity by Iran-backed groups as regional tensions soar during the Israel-Hamas war. Separately, the U.S. Navy has shot down cruise missiles and drones launched from Yemen that appear to have been targeting Israel. Details now from VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington.
Three land attack cruise missiles and several drones were brought down Thursday by the USS Kearney operating in the northern Red Sea. Pentagon Press Secretary Brigadier General Pat Ryder says the missiles and drones were launched by Iran-backed Houthi forces in Yemen and were believed to be on a trajectory toward Israel.
This action was a demonstration of the integrated air and missile defense architecture that we have built in the Middle East and that we are prepared to utilize whenever necessary to protect our partners and our interests in this important region.
Israeli media quoted officials there saying the missiles and drones from Yemen did appear to be targeting Israel. The United States has repeatedly warned Iran, which has proxy forces in Yemen, Syria, Iraq, and Lebanon, not to widen the current war between Israel and Hamas, which runs the Gaza Strip. In the past week, the Pentagon has boosted its presence in the Middle East region with additional naval power, fighter jets, and about 2,000 Marines. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. The Republican-led U.S. House of Representatives is still leaderless. Hardline conservative Republican Jim Jordan pressed ahead with his floundering bid to be Speaker of the House on Thursday, this after his fellow Republicans abandoned a backup plan that would allow the leaderless chamber to resume business. The House will hold a third Speaker vote when it opens for business at 10 a.m. local time on Friday. Jordan has come up short in two votes so far. U.S. lawmakers and the United Nations have criticized Russia for arresting a second American journalist. Statements issued by the UN and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer came Thursday after Russia detained a journalist who works for Radio Free Europe Radio Liberty, a sister agency to VOA. Alsu Kermersheva, who holds dual American-Russian citizenship and is an editor for RFERL, was accused of failing to register as a foreign agent. The journalist, who traveled to Russia in May for a family emergency, was briefly detained in June at an airport, and her passports were confiscated. She was arrested Wednesday and, if convicted, could face up to 5 years in prison. Burkina Faso's health ministry has declared a dengue fever epidemic amid the deadliest outbreak in years. There have been over 50,000 suspected cases and 200 deaths attributed to the mosquito-borne illness this year, the ministry said, mostly in the urban centers of the capital Ouagadougou and Bobo-Dioulasso. It said that about 20% of the cases and deaths were recorded last week alone. The aftermath of the blast at a hospital in Gaza was truly heartbreaking to see. And along with the physical and emotional damage to the building and the people in Gaza, there was considerable political damage as well. Authorities in Gaza blame Israel for the blast. In protest, President Biden's summit with leaders of the Palestinian Authority, Egypt, and Jordan was abruptly canceled, and cities all over the world are racked with protests and, in some cases, violence. For its part, Israel denies having attacked the hospital, and when President Biden was in Tel Aviv, he agreed, saying that the American Defense Department has evidence that the rocket that struck the hospital came from within Gaza. But what do we know, and how do we know it? What kind of evidence do the Israelis and the Americans have? For more, I'm joined by VOA's national security correspondent, Jeff Selden.
On Wednesday, the Israelis put out some video. They say drone video of the area before and after the attack, showing the damage that was there and arguing that based on the damage to the hospital and the surroundings, that there's no evidence of a significant crater. And the Israelis say, because of the ammunition and the munitions that they use, because of the types of missiles that they use, there would have been a significant impact crater. The Israelis have also released an audio intercept that they say is a recording of two Hamas operatives who are talking about what happened moments after it happened. And according to what the dialogue on this intercept, one says, you know, they're saying that this rocket belongs to Palestinian Islamic Jihad. And he's asked, is that true? And then he responds, it looks like it. So they have that audio recording that's been put out. Separately, U.S. President Joe Biden, while visiting Israel, and other U.S. officials have said they have done a detailed analysis of their own intelligence streams. Some of that includes open source material, but they've also looked at overhead imagery, likely satellite imagery, and other information that they have. And they've determined that Israel simply was not responsible.
Now, needless to say, Hamas and the authorities in Gaza dispute the Israeli and the American intelligence. What evidence are they putting forward?
Well, Hamas has put out various claims saying that it wasn't them, that it clearly was Israel. Some of the information and some of the arguments that Hamas has put out is they argue that their missiles, their rockets are what they call somewhat primitive and simply don't have the destructive power to kill hundreds of people at a time. And they also point to things like warnings from Israel that Israeli troops and Israeli forces gave to hospitals in the Gaza Strip, warning of potential airstrikes because of, the Israelis say, these were done because of targets they identified in proximity to the hospitals. But Hamas is using these calls and these warnings and saying this shows Israel's intent to bomb hospitals on purpose.
Now, needless to say, emotions are running high around this particular attack and, of course, the conflict in general. How will this be resolved? It doesn't seem to me like one side will ever believe what the other side has to say. How is this going to be adjudicated?
The questions of adjudication are probably going to be left to some sort of international court, some sort of tribunal, or the court of public opinion at large, because the sides have already been drawn. We've already seen that the explosion at the hospital, which did kill innocent Palestinian civilians, Hamas has said up to 500. The U.S. has said less. There are reports from Europe saying that it's even less than 100, that maybe only a few dozen civilians have been killed. Whatever the truth on the ground is, this has inflamed tensions in a region that was already tense, that was already emotionally boiling over due to the conflict between Israel and Hamas and the plight of the Palestinians who are caught in between. And one of the questions is, how much will the U.S. try to do to get out ahead of a narrative that the U.S. and Israel believe is false? And we've seen in the past with Russia, for example, the U.S. has been willing to declassify intelligence, to put it out there, to illuminate what they say Russia was doing in terms of the invasion of Ukraine. It's something the U.S. has said it will do again. Is this a situation where releasing the information, the intelligence that the U.S. is looking at, might be helpful? We've been asking U.S. officials, but so far we haven't heard whether or not there is anything that they can put out there, that they feel that they can put out there, that will turn the tide of public opinion and help tensions in this region start to simmer from a boil.
Jeff Seldon is VOA's national security correspondent. Jeff, thanks for your analysis. Thanks for your time on this story.
Anytime.
From Washington, it's VOA's International Edition. I'm Steve Karish. Following the breakdown of the planned summit earlier this week with the leaders of Jordan, Egypt, and the Palestinian Authority, VOA is taking a look at some of Israel's neighbors. We're going to look at Egypt in a moment. But now, furious protests over the bombing of the hospital in Gaza continued Thursday on the streets of Jordan. Analysts say that the summit between President Joe Biden and Arab leaders that's been canceled could have further cemented a humanitarian corridor for Gaza. Dale Gavlak has the story.
Curtis Ryan is a Middle East specialist at Appalachian State University in the U.S. He tells VOA that 3 days of public mourning in Jordan announced after the blast at the Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza that killed hundreds and the ensuing large-scale protests in Jordan made holding a summit with U.S. President Joe Biden difficult.
It's really unfortunate that the summit isn't happening because there's such an urgency, since this would have brought together Jordan, Egypt, the United States, the Palestinian Authority, not just for the humanitarian corridor, but the message that Biden would have gotten from the other three parties, and especially from the Jordanian side, would have been the word ceasefire. They were also concerned about the scale of the protest.
Jordanian riot police pushed back thousands of protesters Wednesday near the Israeli embassy in the capital Amman, where several police were injured in clashes with those setting nearby property on fire. No Zionist embassy on Arab land, they shouted. Mass protests by angry Jordanians continue throughout the country. Ryan and other analysts say even without the hospital blast, for which Israel and Palestinian militants have denied responsibility, Jordanians are deeply angered by the treatment of Palestinians by Israel's right-wing government and Jewish settlers, as well as by Israel's extensive bombing in Gaza. Bruce Riddell, Emeritus Senior Fellow at Washington's Brookings Institution, told VOA that Jordan's 1994 peace treaty with Israel is unpopular. And while some of the kingdom's political parties have called for severing ties, King Abdullah has rebuffed those calls and has persisted in urging and working for a two-state solution to the Israeli-Palestinian crisis.
But this crisis is now becoming unprecedented in its scope and intensity, and it will be difficult for him to not listen to the calls for a change in Jordan's status with Israel. The problem the king understands well is that if he changes Jordan's status with Israel, it could affect the bilateral relationship with the Americans. American aid to Jordan, which has to be approved by the Congress, is critical to the Jordanian economy and critical for maintaining stability in the country.
Analysts see Jordan as a key U.S. military ally fighting against Islamist militant extremists and a stabilizing force in the turbulent region. Riddell expressed concerns about what the future holds for Gaza.
Well, who's going to govern Gaza when this war is over? Israel says it can't be Hamas. Then who will it be? It's certainly not going to be the Palestinian Authority. Egypt doesn't want to take over Gaza. We have a real conundrum coming up here. Who is going to provide law and order and respect for the rule of law and human rights in Gaza when this war comes to an end?
With so many players involved and so much at stake for each of them, analysts have expressed concerns that the Israel-Hamas conflict has the possibility of widening in the Middle East. Dale Gavlak, VOA News.
Egypt has so far refused to open its border to Palestinians fleeing Israel's bombardment of the Gaza Strip following the October 7th attack by Hamas militants on civilians and soldiers in southern Israel. As Henry Ridgewell reports, Egypt is wary of allowing thousands of refugees to cross the border.
Thousands of tons of aid are waiting on Egypt's border with Gaza as conditions for Palestinians worsen by the hour. Just across the frontier, in the city of Rafah and across the Gaza Strip, civilians continue to pay the price for Hamas's attack on Israel and the Israeli military's response. Egypt, for now, is not allowing Palestinians to cross the border to escape Gaza into the relative safety of Egypt's Sinai Peninsula. Egyptian President Abdel Fattah el-Sisi said Wednesday that transferring Palestinian citizens from the Gaza Strip to Sinai very simply means that we are transferring the idea of resistance, the idea of fighting from the Gaza Strip to Sinai, and thus Sinai becomes a base for launching operations against Israel. Hundreds of thousands of Palestinians fled their lands in past conflicts with Israel. Many have never been allowed to return. Egypt and much of the Arab world fears the consequences of Palestinians once again fleeing Gaza, says analyst Chris Doyle of the Council for Arab-British Understanding.
It does not want to land up hosting hundreds of thousands of Palestinian civilians in the Sinai in a tented city, with really quite a clear agenda, certainly on the Israeli right, that that becomes the permanent solution. That Palestinians and Egyptians are aware of this, are fearful that what happened to them in 1948 and 1967 when they fled in fear or were kicked out, will happen to them again. They're talking about a second Nakba, a catastrophe.
As in many cities across the Arab world, Egyptians have taken to the streets to denounce Israel's bombardment of Gaza. Again, Chris Doyle.
We're seeing a lot of anger right now, you know, in Egypt about what's going on. So they'll be wary of being seen to be somehow supporting Israeli actions at this moment, even though in private they are very critical of Hamas as well.
Egypt's president seized power in a 2013 military coup, ousting the democratically elected Muslim Brotherhood government. Yossi Meckelberg of London's Chatham House.
Let's not forget that Hamas is an offshoot of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the more we see death among civilians, Palestinian civilians, the more people will go probably to the street, and it can really inflame the political situation in Egypt. And that's why it's actually the Egyptian interest to mediate a ceasefire and mediate quickly.
While Egypt has dialogue with Hamas, it is also able to talk to Israel. Again, Yossi Meckelberg.
Strategically, there is great understanding between Israel and Egypt over the last 10, 11 years. And the other side, for Israel, is a convenient neighbor. Because what is the alternative? The Muslim Brotherhood? This is definitely not something that Israel would like.
For now, analysts say Israel does not appear ready for mediation from any regional power as it seeks the eradication of Hamas in the Gaza Strip. Henry Ridgewell, VOA News, London.
And that's going to wrap it up today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone at VOA, thanks for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Steve Karish in Washington. Stay safe and have a great day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States has been flying in international airspace over the East and South China Seas to help protect freedom of flight and navigation for decades, and it will continue to do so. However, recent dangerous behavior by Chinese pilots have shown a determination by the PRC to coerce a change in lawful U.S. operational activity, said Eli Ratner, Assistant Secretary of Defense for Indo-Pacific Security Affairs. Assistant Secretary Ratner said the risky and coercive incidents by the People's Liberation Army, known as the PLA, constitute a disturbing trend.
Since the fall of 2021, we have seen more than 180 such incidents, more in the past 2 years than in the decade before that. That's nearly 200 cases where PLA operators have performed reckless maneuvers or discharged chaff or shot off flares or approached too rapidly or too close to U.S. aircraft, all as part of trying to interfere with the ability of U.S. forces to operate safely in places where we and every country in the world have every right to be under international law.
On October 17th, the Defense Department released declassified photos and footage of some of the intercepts. These images and videos speak for themselves, said Assistant Secretary Ratner.
The skill and professionalism of American service members should not be the only thing standing between PLA fighter pilots and a dangerous, even fatal, accident. And yet, time after time, that is exactly what has prevented a disaster in the East and South China Seas.
The allies and partners of the United States welcome the American presence in the region, Secretary Ratner said, because it advances our shared vision for a free and open Indo-Pacific. By contrast, the PLA's coercive and risky behavior seeks to intimidate and coerce members of the international community into giving up their rights under international law. Assistant Secretary Ratner noted the United States has tried to reestablish high-level military-to-military communication with the PRC to prevent competition from inadvertently veering into conflict, and that the U.S. would keep up those efforts. He emphasized, however, the United States will continue to fly, sail, and operate safely and responsibly wherever international law allows. Our forces have helped sustain peace and stability in the Indo-Pacific for decades, and we will continue to do so every day.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.